Hey, welcome back. It is Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon in the final hour here on 97.1 FM Talk. And, you know, I should say, by the way, every time that I get the pleasure of being able to fill in, I always have that Channel 5 app on the TV, and I do watch their 6 o'clock news every night to make sure that I am up to date with what's going on in the great city of St. Louis. By the way, in just a few minutes, we'll be joined by Scott Fitzpatrick. He is the Missouri auditor, and they issued a release today, and I read the whole thing, so you don't have to. I'm showing the camera there. I read the whole thing, so you don't have to, and Scott Fitzpatrick is here to tell us about their findings. Scott, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, man. Happy to come on with you. Good to talk to you.
Now, you guys released a audit of the St. Louis Public Schools and found that the St. Louis Public Schools have a poor rating. Walk us through this this audit.
Sure. So there were several findings in the audit, obviously, and the other thing I would stress is this is part one of two of our audit reports for the St. Louis Public Schools. We decided to break it into two reports because, number one, it's a very large district. It's one of the largest in the state, obviously. And number two, just the volume of issues that were presented during the audit in terms of like the number of findings and the scope of the report. It was very broad. And so we wanted to look at kind of the high-profile things first that everybody was concerned with, and the city officials were calling an audit as a result of some of these things that were in the news, or calling for an audit, I should say, as a result of some of these things for the news from the news. And so we looked really in the first report at their budgetary situation, their financial condition, their hiring and firing practices, salaries, credit card use, and procurement processes and procedures. And there were a lot of issues, obviously, with those things. And really the big concern for me coming out of the report is really just the financial trajectory of the district and the fact that they're budgeting $35-ish million per year deficit spending. And they did that for the last fiscal year as well as the fiscal year they just started in July. And at the pace that they are budgeting at, the district would be out of money by 2031. So That's something that's going to be really critical for them to fix very soon, because they're, you know, going to enter a pretty critical territory in terms of their fund balance in the next few years if they don't solve that problem.
Well, so can I ask you, for a simpleton like me, so if they're budgeting 30 some million over what they bring in, where is that 30 million coming from?
Well, they have a fund balance. So they built up a fund balance through the COVID years. There was a lot of extra revenue that was coming to schools during that period of time, a lot of one-time money or temporary funding, I should say, that was part of some of the pandemic era bills that passed, as well as, you know, there was a lot of extra state funding that was sent to them during that period of time. And so they built up a fund balance that's allowed them a cushion from which they can spend more than they're bringing in on an annual basis for a limited period of time. But eventually that will not work anymore.
Now, you guys also found that they were paying $3.5 million in attendance incentives, which you say is a violation of the Missouri Constitution. Can you explain that?
Yeah, the Missouri Constitution broadly prohibits payment for past performance for public employees. So that applies to state government, it applies to counties, cities, school districts, and every other political subdivision of the state, that you cannot issue essentially a bonus to an individual for past performance. They basically have to have a salary, agreed upon salary schedule, but the bonuses are prohibited. And so the district created this incentive program that they were paying out. They paid out, as you noted, $3.5 million in this incentive program. So a lot of which was paid regardless of whether individuals actually met the attendance requirements. It wasn't even if it was constitutional, they didn't actually apply the program the way they said they were designing it. But it's just an unconstitutional way of paying people. And, you know, when you're talking about a district that size, $3.5 million, that's a lot of money. I mean, it's a lot of taxpayer money to be used in a way that is in violation of the Constitution.
Now, I also, the expenditures here, I kind of had to start laughing, Scott, because the first thing you mentioned is a Topgolf rental for almost $4,000. Did you dig in and see what they were actually using that Topgolf rental for? What was the event the schools were using that for?
I think they did. There was some, I don't know if it was a team building or what the event was. I remember hearing an explanation for it at one point, but you're right. I mean, we did a sample. You know, when we do an audit, we basically select a sample of a population. And in this case, there was 1.4 million in transactions or purchases using their 24 purchasing cards from June of 2023 through August of 2024. And so we selected 27 of those transactions to just test if they were questionable or unreasonable or not. And of the 27, what we found was that 17 were problematic. So, you know, 63% of the sample was problematic. And you're right. I mean, we had the almost $4,000 to Topgolf. There was a $1,700 charge for a 4-night stay at the Caesars Palace Resort in Las Vegas. And then another almost $1,300 for a mystery Airbnb rental that nobody can explain what that was for, that was charged on the superintendent's card. So those are just some examples of the $1.4 million of credit card purchases that we identified in our sample that were problematic.
Man, I wonder what Odyssey would do if I charged them a 4-night stay at Caesar's Palace. I mean, my gosh, these, reading this report, it seems like some of the officials were kind of living high, or are kind of living high.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, we included in the report, and I actually, asked the audit staff to add at the end of the report an appendix showing just the what the superintendent calls her cabinet, the cabinet positions, and you'll see there's 12 cabinet positions, and if you total up, I haven't done the math, but I'd be interested because the governor of Missouri has 16 cabinet members. There's 16 departments. I think that the St. Louis Public Schools superintendent's cabinet, total salary was more than the governor of Missouri's cabinet. So you know, they clearly had a lot of administrative positions, at the school district, just a tremendous salary. You know, I mean, when you're looking at the salaries, a lot of these people are in the, you know, high 100s in the, to the 200,000, mark in terms of their salaries. And they're all public employees. I mean, you can look at state government. You won't find hardly anybody making that kind of money in state government. So they're definitely, very high salaries, lots of administrative staff, the cabinet being almost the size of the cabinet of the governor of Missouri is pretty unbelievable.
So you said this is part one. There's going to be a second one. What should we look for in that release?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, we're going to look at other kind of more school district specific items in that. We're looking specifically at what happened with the transportation issue that exploded on the district right before school last year, how they ended up in that situation. Did they not have provisions in their contract that allowed them to recoup the cost of replacing that vendor, you know, when they had a short notice cancellation like that? We're going to look at the real estate. The school district owns a tremendous amount of real estate that is blighted and that is not in use. They also have a lot of school buildings that are very underutilized. Maybe they're designed for 1,000 kids and they've got a couple hundred kids in them or something like that. So we're going to look at kind of the use of their fixed assets. We're going to look at their attendance policies and tracking, when kids are coming to school and how they report on that. There will be, security, safety drills, a lot of the things that, can impact student safety, student performance, and those sorts of things. So it's really going to be more school district specific type issues that will be in that second report.
Would you expect, or have you seen similar things in other big city school districts?
Well, there's been very little auditing of schools prior to my administration by the state auditor's office. And so when we took office, the office was very understaffed. We have tried to ramp up the school auditing program so that we've always had a couple of schools under audit the whole time during the 2.5 years that I've been here. And so we've issued the other large district we've issued a report on was Francis Howell. We're getting ready to issue a report on the independent school district over by Kansas City. And neither, I mean, obviously there were a lot of issues at Francis Howell. I don't know if you ever saw that report, but Francis Howell was a district that had a lot of problems. They had a high school that they built that was supposed to cost $80 million that ended up costing like $160 million. So we looked at their procurement process, their construction process that they went through on that high school, and how they ended up in such a terrible position on that deal. Independence is not out yet, but I'll just go ahead and tell you. I mean, it's a pretty good report. They're doing a fairly good job over there running their school district. But I would say St. Louis takes the cake in terms of problems. Many more problems than Francis Howell was dealing with.
Well, Scott, we appreciate you joining us and breaking it down.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
That is Scott Fitzpatrick. He is Missouri State Auditor, and he and his team released an audit of the St. Louis Public Schools. Yeah, the almost $4,000 for Top Golf rental. That one stuck out. Obviously, four nights at Caesars. I'd like my employer to give me four nights at Caesars, let me tell you. It is Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon, and we are back after this. Hey, welcome back. Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon. And thanks to all who have joined us so far. Thanks to you for listening. You know, we've got everyone talking tough, right? Everyone on the left talking tough. You got governors of very blue states talking tough. And here is clip 24. You've got, really, the circus with these three, Hochul, Newsom, and Pritzker, talking about how they're going to fight back. Clip 24.
Well, this is a war. We are at war. And that's why the gloves are off, and I say, bring it on.
They've triggered this response, and we're not going to roll over, and we're going to fight fire with fire.
This is a righteous act of courage, and we can all take a page from the leader's playbook. When you show people that you have the will to fight, well, they can muster the will to fight, too.
Yeah, you know, Governor Hochul saying that, you know, this is war. This is war with Republicans. Democrats continue to use rhetoric like that. We have a guy here in Erie County, New York, who said that he wants to eliminate the Republican Party in Amherst, which is the biggest suburb of Buffalo. And, you know, I mean, it's words like that. And then you see some of the reactions. You see some of the rhetoric from people. Now, I joined Blue Sky so I can see what the opposition mindset is saying. And let me tell you, I mean, they say some ridiculously hateful things. I'm not going to sit here and say Republicans don't. I mean, but some of the things that I've seen on Blue Sky, I mean, there are people on Blue Sky that are still debating if Donald Trump was shot in the ear or not. I mean, seriously, you want to talk about conspiracy? They're debating if Trump was actually shot in the air or if it was all fake. It never happened. I mean, that's what's going on Blue Sky. That's what's going on with the extreme left. And now you've got Hochul who's saying we're going to war with Republicans. Again, this rhetoric, nothing new from the Democratic Party. We heard it the first time Trump was president. We're hearing it now. And let me tell you, I knew I wouldn't be sick of winning, but my gosh, I did not know that the daily freakouts from elected officials were going to be back in full force. And we are seeing it again. And we're seeing it with this, you know, J.P. Pritzker saying this is a righteous act. As I said in the first segment of the show, this is nothing more than a performance. And guess what? You're not going to get your way. The Democrats running off to Illinois and New York, again, to states that have taken full advantage of gerrymandering. It is like when my parents would put me in timeout when I was a kid. They would put me in this corner in the living room in our house in Hornell, New York, and I would kick the wall until until my time in timeout was over. Didn't change anything. Sometimes it actually got me in more trouble. I was just being a loud, annoying child throwing a temper tantrum because I didn't get my way. And that's what's going on with these Texas Democrats. They're not scoring. They might be scoring political points among Democrats, but they're not gaining anything. They're not changing anything. They're running away from their job. They're running away from their constituents. This is the same as, you know, the Democrats who won't come on my show. The leading mayor, the leading candidate for mayor in Buffalo won't come on my show because they don't want opposing thoughts. They want you to be in line with them. And if you're not, it's just like Kathy Hochul said, they want to go to war. They want to eliminate the Republican Party. And it's sad that we've gotten to this point. You've got more and more Democrats that don't want to find a common ground. And again, more and more Democrats who are so used to having the media on their side and being able to dictate which way the interview goes, that you have Democrats that want to avoid any kind of opposition questioning. I mean, my gosh, they want to sit there and point to Trump for everything. Trump did an interview with Terry Moran from ABC. We learned exactly what Terry Moran thought of Republicans. Right? But Trump did an interview with him. He didn't run away. He did a town hall with Caitlin Collins. My gosh, every night the Caitlin Collins show seems to be the anti-Trump show. And then it's sad when you have Democrats that, you know, again, you have a few. You have a few that will talk with conservative interviewers, but most want to run away. Again, because they want to go to war with the Republicans. And this display in Texas, and again, regardless of how you feel about Texas doing a mid-decade census switch, which, by the way, blue states have attempted to do, regardless of how you feel about it, you've got to admit that running to Illinois is laughable. And again, it's running away from your job. It's running away from your constituents. So to me, this is just a different page out of the same book of how Democrats and their rhetoric for at least the last 10 years. And, you know, while we're at it, let's play clip 25. I'd like to play this this rich clip from Governor Pritzker.
Remember, all bets are off when the cult leader and, you know, would-be dictator of the United States tells Texas to midstream change the game. When they know that they're going to lose in 2026, all bets are off. Everything's got to be on the table.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. They don't know they're going to lose in 26. I think it's the Democrats who are scared they're not going to have the midterm wave that, let's be honest, the opposing party almost always gets because they are historically unpopular. In this calling Trump, I'm telling you, calling Trump a cult leader, a dictator, a fascist, authoritarian, it's not working. It's not. This is not the first term. You know, people woke up in November of 24. There's a reason Trump is president. And it's because Americans looked at two choices and they thought, well, this guy's a lot better than whatever the last administration was. And that includes Kamala Harris. She was part of that last administration. People didn't vote for him thinking he was a dictator, an authoritarian, a fascist, because he's not. It's lazy. And it's the same stuff they pulled for 4 years. It's funny, the dictator got on a helicopter and got the heck out of D.C. when his term was up. The authoritarian walked away from power, right? But again, that would take common sense. It's using these buzzwords. And then you've got people who just, you know, are glued to CNN all day, every day, and they're using the buzzwords. I don't think half of them know what fascist even means. I really don't. And that's not me calling them stupid. That's just me saying they're using it in a way that doesn't make sense. And again, think what you want of Trump. You hate Trump, that's fine. But can Democrats stop calling everyone they don't like a fascist, a Nazi, a racist, a sexist? You're taking weight out of words that should have weight. They should carry some weight. But because everything we don't like is one of these things, it doesn't take the weight. It should mean something when you call someone a racist, right? but the Democrats have used it to explain everyone they don't like that the word doesn't carry the weight anymore. And that right there is a real shame. When we come back, we'll get a Democrat's thoughts on what the state of the party is and what the future of the party looks like. Does it look like the policies of Zoran Mamdani? We'll ask after this. Welcome back. It is Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon, and we are joined by Jane Duker. You know her. She's a local attorney, former candidate for Democratic nomination for St. Louis County Executive, and former chief of staff of Governor Holden. Jane, welcome back to the show.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Good.
You know, I'm here in New York State, so obviously I'm seeing a lot of news about Zoran Mamdani.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth Warren was asked yesterday if Zoran Mamdani was, I'm paraphrasing, the future of the party. And she said, you bet. Jane, what's your take on that comment and Zoran Mamdani?
Well, first of all, it's ridiculous. And, you know, this does arise from the problem that I've been pointing out for a while, that when Democrats don't properly brand themselves in a positive way, it will be branded for you. And, you know, I mean, Bernie Sanders loves him. He's not even a Democrat. And, you know, I'm not surprised that Elizabeth Warren loves him. But this is, I mean, this is like the socialist wing of the party, though. And I don't think it reflects the values of most Democrats. But, I mean, New York could cause problems for Democrats. If we don't get it together, he is going to be our brand. AOC is going to be our brand. Bernie's going to be our brand. And if we don't shake it, I think the American people are not going to be interested in Democrats.
So who does it take to push back? Because I'm not saying that you have everyone getting in line with Mamdani, but you don't see pushback. You don't see Governor Hochul pushing back on Mamdani or Hakeem Jeffries pushing back.
Well, I mean, I think the failure of them to take his calls, you know what I mean, for to help campaign and to endorse, I think that speaks loudly. But you're right. I mean, if the party doesn't come out and say, these are not, defunding the police is not our values. I mean, that's what needs to be said. I mean, and I think when you say pushback, that's what it should mean. It should mean that we come out and say, you know what? We are a capitalist country. There may be Republicans, there may be Democrats, but we are all capitalists. We are not socialists. And this idea that New York is going to provide free daycare is delusional. It's delusional. And what I don't like is these local governments in the cities who want to rebel against whatever, that they think that they can take on problems that are not properly local government. Child care is not a local government issue. They don't have enough money. I mean, they would have to fully defund the police in order to provide free child care. I mean, it's insane. It's insane. So, you know, I'm hoping this is a good opportunity for Democrats to stand up. I am nervous whether they will do it.
So if you had the ear of an Eric Adams and Andrew Cuomo, I mean, would you tell one to step down, and who would you tell to step down?
I would probably see, this is also the problem. When the other candidates are not that great, you know, it doesn't help. And so like this is one of those situations where you should like start over. But that's not possible. So, I mean, you're going to have one of these candidates stand up and say, I'm not going to defund the police. You may not like me for A, B, and C, but I'm going to keep you safe. And that needs to be the message. I mean, without making people safe, nothing else matters. And every poll will always tell you public safety is the number one issue. So I don't know why Democrats, I've been a Democrat for, you know, 30 something years. And, you know, when I was in the party and we were actually winning statewide races in Missouri, we were not anti-police. Yeah. And there were just in firefighters. Those are working people. We're supposed to be the party of the working person. And we've lost our way on that.
So, you know, we hear so much about the, Democrat Party. I mean, obviously, I mean, Republicans are underwater. They're under 50%. But Democrats are historically low in some of these polls. Is it, yes. You know, we hear so much about it being the woke end of the party. I mean, does that coincide with the ultra left like the AOCs? Do you think that is playing into these low poll numbers?
Oh, no question. Absolutely no question. I think that, I mean, the presidential should show you that. People want to feel safe. They want to feel safe from the border, and they want to feel safe within cities. And that is not happening. And I do think, I don't think the middle, the people that we're supposed to get in presidentials, believed that Kamala would actually do what it takes to, you know, to keep people safe. I mean, she was a prosecutor and people didn't believe her because she spent a lot of years almost denying that she was a prosecutor. And I think people sense that. And, I think if we don't get over the wokeness, I wonder what the Republican Party is going to do after Trump is gone. I mean, who's going to fill that void? But the Democrats have a more fundamental problem in that we have not defined ourselves as to what we are. And I think that's what we need to do.
Now, Jane, I'm sure you'll be asked this and have been asked this for the next few years, but you talk about the void after Trump for Republicans. I mean, it should be an opportunity for Democrats to take advantage of. Who is or who are, maybe there's a list, the candidates that you think would help the Republican Party, I'm sorry, the Democratic Party, follow the MAGA movement of Trump?
Well, I mean, I think that one, you're going to need a moderate. This idea that we need to go further left to make our fortunes better is ridiculous, okay? Because we're never going to get that middle. As small as it is, we're never going to get that middle. So it's going to have to be somebody in moderate. My belief is that we need to find somebody in the Midwest. Going to either coast right now, I just don't think is a good sale for the American people. And so I think we need to find a Midwesterner. We need to find somebody who's pro-police, who understands. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's got to be like in the middle, like Bill Clinton. I mean, he stole the middle by talking about fraud, waste, and abuse. And now we act like it's a dirty word. I mean, he was the man who got us a budget surplus. And, you know, and we're going to reject those values. I mean, that's it. To me, it is more important that we get somebody consistent with those values. The values that the bulk of Americans believe. We have to stop talking about all these fringe issues that affect 1 million of 1% of the population.
Do you think you mentioned Bill Clinton, Arkansas now a pretty dominantly red state. Do you think it's someone from a red state like an Andy Beshear who, Trump wins the state by 30, but somehow Beshear continues to win the governor's seat?
Beshear is a very good example of what I'm talking about. And he's sort of bucking the woke trend. And I mean, we're seeing it so here in St. Louis. I mean, the voters are rejecting kind of the woke. That's sort of done. And I think that, even in urban areas, people are starting to think, well, you know what? Maybe we don't want to be shot. Maybe we do want to be safe. And maybe, this experiment that we tried where we defund the police and we let everybody out of jail, maybe that's not the right way we go. So I do believe there is a movement toward the middle. But, this guy in New York, he's going to frustrate us. He's going to frustrate our brand because if he gets through, it's going to be, he's the easiest guy to point to. And again, if we don't brand ourselves, it's going to be done for us.
And because it's New York, it might be a local election, but it does have national consequences.
It could. I mean, it's going to just make it a little bit harder for us to develop the brand that we want in order to start capturing the middle. I mean, we captured the middle, 4 years ago. And, and we gave it away. And so I think that, I think both parties, I think next election, both parties have a lot of soul searching to do. And it might be a real opportunity for everyone to realign. But we have to start preparing for that now.
I know we're running out of time, but I got to ask you, speaking of the next election, the midterms are next year, and we're seeing the Texas Democrats in Illinois, they're in Albany. Now, I'm looking at this as, regardless of what you think about the debate in Texas, I'm looking at the outrage from the left as, it's five seats, and yes, the Republicans might be unpopular, but we're historically unpopular. Are the Democrats looking at the midterms as, this might not be the easy takeover of the House that we thought?
Yes. And I mean, people may not admit it, but, we had a possibility, to take the normal situation, which is the incumbent loses seats and, do more with that. and actually start to put us in a good position for the next presidential. But I've not really seen the planning, the coalescing, the message, you know, the message discipline, the message development at all. So I'm afraid that we're going to miss an opportunity to make some gains. I am cautiously optimistic we can still get there, but and now the political cycle is so much faster than it used to be. And so things can change on a dime. And I'm sort of hoping that something helps us with that. But right now, I'm not thrilled. I think people sort of think that we're doing okay right now. And so, I mean, Trump may not get, a contrary message in the midterms. And that could be bad for us, because they're going to roll a lot of policies through if that happens. So it's going to be interesting.
Hey, Jane, great talking to you, and we'll hear from you again soon.
Great. Thanks. Have a good day.
Thanks. You too. That's Jane Duker, local attorney, former candidate for St. Louis County Executive and former chief of staff for Governor Holden. We'll be back with our final segment after this. Wrapping up things here, Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon. You know, I had a typical millennial moment in the last segment. Ethan texted me something, and I should have been looking at my phone. Instead, I just depend on my watch to buzz, and my watch battery died 3 hours ago because I'm also awful at charging. So, Ethan, I apologize. I did see your text after the segment, but that's 100% my fault.
No worries.
But it's for some reason, you know, these electronics, you have them for a few years, then the battery starts going. You know, it used to be I could charge the watch twice a week and I'd be fine. Now it's if I don't put it on the charger after the gym every night, we're in trouble the next day.
You know, and, I just got a new phone, and it's the best thing in the maybe not the best thing in the world, but it's pretty great when you get the new phone and you go from having to it barely making it through the work day or having to charge it on the way home from work to at the end of the night still having 50% battery. Those first 6 months, they're just great. And that's where I'm at right now.
It's the best phone. It's the absolute best phone. Mm-hmm. And by the way, to go back on something we were talking about an hour ago, the Blues and Sabres play in St. Louis December 29th. Maybe that's the that's the weekend I should come
to St.
Louis.
New Year's trip? Huh?
Will anyone be in town?
I will be in town.
All right. Well, maybe I'll make that work. Maybe I can convince the wife that a post-Christmas trip to St. Louis to see the Sabres play. Not that the Sabres are going to be a fun team to watch. I'm just saying that's an excuse to get out there and to see everybody. But with that in mind, it is time for the audio clip of the day.
Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
And you know what? I thought with all the seriousness we've covered in the interviews, this is just a ridiculous one. Let's play clip 19 as the cut of the day.
It's just another way to spend my money for the country.
Are you considering this
what story?
Anything I do is financed by me, so you know where it's contributed. Just like my salary is contributed, but nobody ever mentions that.
True.
Yes. Trump. Answer. People are the media yelling questions up to Trump on the roof, and as he's getting called a fascist and an authoritarian, he's actually making permanent changes to the White House with his money, not collecting a paycheck, and they'll still find something wrong with it. But I thought that was a great way to start the day. I walk into work this morning around 10 a.m. and what do I see? Live on Fox, it's Trump yelling down to the media.
Sue, did you see the video of this?
Yes.
It's oh my gosh. If you haven't seen the video, go and look it up, because it's literally him standing on the White House roof and he's yelling out the answers like his hands cuffed to his mouth saying, "I'm paying with my money." It's so funny. It's so Trump, though.
Yes.
It's so Trump.
It is. I mean, just so many iconic moments. And I'm telling you, we are getting more memeable stuff in the first few months of this term than we ever got in the first term. And on a more serious note, things are getting done. And he is making some necessary changes to the White House that, you know, both parties will be able to enjoy into the future. So I thought that was a fun clip to end the day on. I will be back here tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it, guys. I will be sunburnt and stuffed from Fair Food. So I will be able to give you guys a report on day one, opening the Erie County Fair here in Erie County, and then coming back to the studio and filling in for Mark Reardon.
Enjoy.
Oh, thank you. I will. And believe me, I'll have, if there's anything the fair gives me, it's a bunch of stories, and I'll have that for you. Always a pleasure to fill in. Always great to work with Sue, with Fred, with Ethan, and looking forward to doing it again tomorrow. You want to follow me, The Joe Beamer, on X, or send me an email, joe.beamer@wben.com. We'll talk to you tomorrow.